Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's February 3, 2014, and this is episode 407. This week's podcast is a conversation with my friend Valerie Jardin, recorded a few weeks ago via a Google Hangout on air. You can follow along with the video over on YouTube, and I'll put links to this in the show notes, but as it was basically a conversation, I've removed the video and will just release this as an audio podcast. I'll do a little bit more of an introduction as we get started here, so let's just jump right into it. Okay, so I'm not sure, you know, we've lost the countdown. I didn't get a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, so I'm assuming that we're on air now. And for those of you that are watching, I wanted to just give you a quick outline. Valerie and I are both co-hosts on This Week in Photo, very similar current photography career paths, and we decided to get together and have a chat about sharing our passion, how we are both doing very similar sort of work now, and we're going to just expand on that topic. So this is you know, it's not necessarily my show. We're both, Valerie and I, will be sharing this, so it's just going to be a chat between two photography buddies. So hi. Good morning or good evening, Valerie.
Good evening, Martin. Yes, it struck me as, I mean, we've had so many conversations together and we've become good friends over the years, and how our careers, although we probably followed different paths, but we pretty much down to sharing the passion through teaching and writing, and not so much looking for new clients, or like I used to shoot commercial photography, mostly food and interiors, and now I still have a few clients that I can't quite say no to, but I'm not looking for new business because I really don't have time, and I'm just so happy teaching and writing about photography that, and I feel you're kind of in the similar path, although I think you do also sell some of your fine art work, which I need to push a little more on my end, but so it's like we're in a situation where we don't need to compromise with a client, and I think it's kind of a cool place to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that by the nature of this chat, I mean, we've got literally no show notes or anything to work from today. We're going to be just batting off ideas off each other ad lib. But what you just made me think of there was I was with my accountant yesterday, and I mentioned a recent communication that I had with someone. And I'm gonna relay this episode because of what you just said about, you know, choosing your clients. Even within the education, the work that I'm doing now, where I am doing a lot of tours, I'm doing a lot of private tours now, where I'll take people out and teach them photography while showing them around places. And you just mentioned that you don't have time to do the assignment work. And what I'm finding is that with me, the way I'm building out my business, with a big part of it being writing, I ideally want to have, my winter season in Japan here is huge. That's the big thing for me. I've got 3 winter tours next year. I've got 2 just coming up. I'm starting one in a few days, the next one in 2 weeks, 3 weeks' time. And next year, we've got 3. I'm going to be basically on the road from the beginning of January until the start of March. But then after that, I want to have just 1 or 2, maybe 2 max, tours per quarter. And that will keep food on the table. But also, the reason I want to do that is so that I can write in between. I really enjoy the writing, and we're going to touch on this. I want to continue to write in between the tours, because that not only brings in additional income, it gives me a way of sharing my images and putting people back on tours, but also it becomes a passive income. I'm going to get back full circle on this now and say that even within the tours and the education part, I am kind of choosing my customers. I had someone email me a couple of weeks ago asking me to do a private tour, and it turned out that they had a know, they weren't really my, they didn't really want to shoot the genre that I'm able to really help with them with. But also, they mentioned that my day rate was a little on the high side. So I, so I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I was professional about it, but it was, okay, so, you know, maybe I'm not the right person for you to be working with. And the reason I'm doing that is, I mean, I have said this a number of times. I don't want to do any job where I feel as though I am not being fully appreciated. I want people to turn up on my tours thinking that, you know, they've paid a good price, but they're going to get a good product. And my tours are in no way the most expensive. There are people out there doing very similar tours for twice the amount that I charge. There are people doing them for less. But I've set my prices at where I think I've got my value point. And this comment, you know, it's a little on the high side, but then they tried to suggest that I go and invite other people on the tour to bring the price down. And, you know, if I wanted to do that, I would already have that tour in place. So my point is, you know, basically, it was very, very similar to what I started to do with assignments. If I have to spend too much time trying to, or any time, trying to explain to someone the value proposition that I bring, I don't want to do it. I want to be in a position where people know the value that I'm bringing to the table and are prepared to pay a reasonable price for it. And if they're not, I don't want to take that person around Japan because they're going to be complaining about everything. You know, it's just That's not right. the sort of customer that I want to work with. So, you know, the point was, picking and choosing not to the degree where, you know, I don't end up doing any work, because that's obviously going to be a big problem. But I've cultivated a certain amount. I've got so far down the path that I want to be on, and I'm attracting the customers that I love working with, and so I don't want to compromise that. And, you know, that was part of what I was trying to say there.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's true. I don't do the I'm just starting to offer the personal workshops, but I'm so busy with the group workshops. I had 9 workshops last year, and I have 9 or 10 going this year. And so doesn't give me much time to do the other ones on the side. But I can see that. I mean, this is the price, you know, take it or leave it. I'm not pushing you to get into it, but I'm not going to, you know, I can't, you know, I price it a certain price for a reason, and you can't, it's just like for a commercial client. I mean, you just can't start cutting your price, you know, to please everybody. And this is what I think I'm worth. And I totally agree. But that said, so your workshops are all over the world too. I mean, mostly in Japan, but now you started leading workshops in Iceland. And then you did some. Are you doing some in Africa this year also?
I am probably doing another Namibia tour. We've got to nail the details down at the moment, but yeah. Okay. I've done them. We've done Antarctica.
I've done
workshops in Antarctica as well, and that's not going to stop. You know, I mean, I'm really enjoying getting around to these places. That's my main business model. You know, doing the tours and helping, and this is all an extension of the podcast, in that, you know, it started out where I found that I could help people with their photography, and in that process my photography has gotten much better. You know, I understand that I'm not the best photographer in the world, but I'm not too shabby either, and so it's got to the point where I can help people with their photography. And with this being all that I do now, I've put myself in a position to be able to make that a business model that will put food on the table and keep a roof over our heads.
Yeah, and that's true. And we do learn a lot. I mean, teaching is the best way to learn.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and it's just amazing too when we're my groups are small. I used to take up to 12 participants. Now I'm down to 8, and I find that's just the magic number when I'm teaching solo, and just giving enough attention to everyone, and then it becomes just a family, and the group gels, and it's so exciting, and everybody learns from everybody, and it's just I was just in Paris last week just doing some research, actually, because I need to update what my Paris workshops. I have a lot of return customers, so I kind of need to keep them fresh, and I need to keep them fresh for me too, because I need to be excited. I think you teach if you're excited about it. If it becomes like, oh, well, I've been there so many times, then, you know, why do it? So I do change my itineraries a lot. And it's funny because I was really looking forward to being in Paris by myself for 4 days, thinking, okay, I'm just going to, it's going to be me and my camera. I'm going to hang out with a friend, but I'm not going to have a group. And it's funny, after 3 days, I was just wishing I had students coming in. I was like, okay, I'm bored now. I need my group with me. And it's become such a big part of my life when I'm traveling to have those people with me. And we all share the same passion. It's just so much fun. I mean, it is so much fun. I don't know. I see some questions coming on the stream there. I don't know if we should start answering a few or not.
Yeah,
or maybe
well,
wait
just to
the
let
end.
people know that, you know, we do see the questions coming in. We've got a couple there. We'll move on to those in a moment. Yeah. But let's take this to a good point first. You just mentioned that, you know, you want to be excited. And that is part of my mantra of never wanting to do a job that I don't want to do. And that's why I started my business. I incorporated Martin Bailey Photography just over 3 years ago now, at the end of 2010. And I, from that point on, you know, I decided that I was not going to do work that I couldn't get excited about. Because if I'm not excited about the work, then I'm not going to put in 100%, and I don't want to ever give someone a reason to not be fully satisfied with what I do. And so being excited about it, and it's not always about the money, it could be about the location. I mean, I've done tours for free, basically working with friends, because I wanted to get to that location, but that is compensation enough, and I'm happy with the deal. So it's definitely not just about money. That's important. You've got to put food on the plate, but what you just said resonates so much. You've got to be excited about what you do.
Yeah, and that's what people tell me when I'm on the workshop. The biggest compliment I get is, you're so contagious, and your passion is so contagious, and we're just so excited to be there. And I don't want that to stop. Somebody asked me the other day, actually, how long are you going to be doing this? I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm going to do it for as long as it's fun. If it stops being fun, I'll be doing something else. And I think that's how I've approached everything in my photography. And I went from, you know, shooting portraits into then shooting commercially interiors and such, because portraits were starting to get boring. And I'm like, if I'm bored doing it, you can't turn your art into a business for money. You have to do it for the passion, because there's always going to be somebody who is doing it for passion who's going to be better than you if you stop being passionate about. So when portraiture started being boring, then I moved into something else, and that's when I started doing food photography, and then I did interior photography for a long, long time. And while I was doing that, I was always working on personal projects, and street photography was really what I love to do. That's how I started writing about it, and then teaching workshops. So, and then slowly the commercial photography was kind of on the side.
You put it to the sidelines.
It to the side, and now I pretty much don't have any time. If I was doing it for money, I'd still be shooting commercially, because there'd be a lot more money doing what I was doing commercially full time than teaching workshops. But now I'm shooting for me. I'm not compromising with a client. I shoot what I want. People come on my workshop because they like what I do. And hey, that's pretty fun. Yeah. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
That's so true. I mean, we're now in the black. We've just started our fourth fiscal year. We've got, as a company, I have finally, you know, we're making money. But I'm taking less than a quarter the salary that I used to do in my old job. Yeah. I had a great job. But am I happy now? Hell yeah.
Yes.
I'm happier than, you know, this is my office. I mean, you can see I've got junk behind me. I've been doing some product shoots. I updated my profile photo for the first time in four years. I figured that I better have something up that looks a little more rotund than what my old one did. I'm happy as hell. I've got so much less stress now, but I work harder than I've ever done. I mean, I have always been a hard worker. And before, I had a full-time job in Japan, so you've got overtime, you've got all sorts of stuff going off. And I'd get home and I'd do my second job. I'd be recording podcasts. I'd be updating my website. I was doing two jobs for 5 years. But then I got myself out of the day job thinking that I'd have more time to do my photography and personal projects, things like that. The fact is I've been busier since this is all I do than I was when I was doing two jobs. And so I'm working maybe twice the hours for a quarter of the pay, but I'm happy and I'm taking my photography further forward. I'm meeting people from all around the world and I'm having a whale of a time. Living the dream, as David Duschenman's manager, Corwin Hubert, says. So,
I totally relate. Because people sometimes tell me, wait a minute, you went from shooting commercially to teaching? I said, yes, isn't that great? It's like, yeah, it's not about the money, for sure, I'm just having a blast. And, I mean, I'm going to Australia in February just because I said, oh, well, I want to go to Australia, so I'm going to set up a workshop. Mm. And I did, and I'm going to Australia. I've never been there. And I'm going to be teaching there for a week. So, you know, you can't beat that. It's awesome. And sharing and seeing people grow and get passionate about the craft, partly thanks to you, is so gratifying. Or getting those, I write articles, you write books mostly, but I write mostly articles, and just getting those emails, people telling you, oh, you just made me pick up photography again. I'm so excited, and it's just, it's so much fun. You just touch somebody's life, and I don't think there is a better feeling. And even if you inspire one person, it's just awesome. So
I mean, I get that through the podcast and through my writing as well. And so 100%. It's I think like we said earlier, We started out in different. While you were doing your commercial work, I was doing a very occasional amount of photography commercial work while I was in my own IT related software development sort of job. But we've ended up sort of converging into a very similar career paths where we're teaching, we're writing, and we're loving it. So
it's all about sharing. And I'm taking a new, I'm going on a new adventure with Trey Ratcliffe's new project, The Arcanum.
Yeah, so congratulations on that.
That's another exciting adventure into teaching at a completely different level, but it's going to be fun. And so that should launch in the next few weeks. We're just starting training and meeting with the other masters right now. Mm. But so it's all about teaching again and sharing the passion and reaching more people and teaching what we love, because my specialty for the Arcanum will be street photography. And so that's really, really a lot of fun. So, yeah.
So, you know, one thing, we're going to jump onto these questions in a moment. One thing that I did want to add, because we almost got there a little while ago. We're talking about this from a profession sort of standpoint at the moment. But there is a huge link to bring this back to your hobbyist or your amateur in the true sense of the word of being a lover of photography. We've been talking about doing what we love, and I think that a lot of people ask me about developing a style, and there's a lot of people that want to do this to make money, but most people that want to make money these days out of photography are people that want to make enough money so that they can buy more gear without having to go and get have a heated argument with the spouse about it. So the takeaway here for people that aren't necessarily trying to make this their career is that you've got to try to shoot what you love. And if you shoot what you love, then good things will happen. You know, you'll either, the minimum that will happen is you'll get better at it, because the more you do something, the better you get. It's just how it is. But the other thing is that if you shoot what you love, you're going to be passionate about it. You're going to want to pick up the camera. You're going to be out there more often, and you're going to develop the skills, and you'll see it in your work. If you're shooting just for money, or if you're shooting, something that, like, for example, that, you know, there's a lot of types of photography that are, I mean, it's like HDR. I mean, I've got nothing against HDR, but it just doesn't really work for me. But just because it's popular, a lot of people are out there creating pretty tardy HDR work because it's popular. It's like, okay, HDR is the thing, I've got to go and do that. If you don't enjoy doing a certain type of photography, don't do it. You know, it's not fashion. You don't have to do something just because everyone else is wearing purple pants or whatever. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to. So, yep. I think that doing something for the love of it and be passionate, it really helps you to keep passionate about it. So,
you have to please yourself first with your photography. Yeah. Yeah. You can't, I mean, if we all wanted to please other people, we would all be photographing kittens, because that's what people like on Facebook. You need to photograph, and that gives you an edge too. If you're passionate about what you photograph, then you'll get it, you'll have an edge too. Mm. But you can't pretend, I think. All comes down to that. But it's important to try a lot of different things too.
Yeah. So that's a brilliant point, because some people, it takes years to find out what you enjoy photographing. Mm. You know, so you do often have to shoot many different types of subjects until you really start to gravitate. And that's what I think happens. If you shoot a lot, I mean, I've shot cultural, I've done a little bit of street work, I've been doing my wildlife for a long time, I've been doing nature and landscapes, but you find that, okay, you shoot many different types of photographs, and then you get a day off, and you think, okay, what am I going to do? And you'll start to gravitate. You'll start to think, okay, well, I'm going to jump in the car and drive into the mountains and go for a hike, and I'm going to take my camera and my tripod and do some photography. And then the next day you get off, you'll think, okay, well, what am I going to do? And then all of a sudden you're thinking about getting into the mountains again. The chances are that you're going to be more interested in landscape photography than street work. But if you get a day off and you say, okay, well, I'm going to go and take a walk in the market and shoot some photographs of people, you start to gravitate towards the genres that you are going to be passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so shoot a lot, try lots of different things. I've tried HDR, and I'm not going to keep harping on at this, because I don't dislike HDR, but I just don't enjoy it. So, and I don't feel it's necessary now with the dynamic range that we have in our cameras, but that is beside the point. I have gravitated away from that sort of work. It doesn't interest me, so I don't do it. But I've learned a lot of areas that I do enjoy shooting, and so I do it. And it pulls you in a certain direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say, like, a good indicator is if somebody gives you a free trip to pretty much anywhere in the world, where are you going to want to go? Well, you're probably going to go to Iceland. I'm going to ask to go to New York City, you know, because that's what I gravitate towards. You send me to a tropical island, I'm going to be bored to tears. I need city, I need people, I need the grit. But I mean, doesn't mean I don't enjoy a landscape. I mean, I'm in Minnesota, I'm in wolf country. I love it. It's beautiful. You'd love it, Martin. You have to come out
absolutely.
Here. But I appreciate it, and I want to capture it all with my camera. But if I have to choose one thing, you know, it's like if you had to pick one thing to take to a desert island, I'd be miserable because I need people. But if I pick one thing, it would be street photography. Ultimately, if I had to limit myself, that's what I would pick. But I do enjoy the beautiful morning light on the prairie land in Minnesota. It's gorgeous. The first frost, it's snowing right now. It's gorgeous. I still want to capture that, but that's not what I want to teach. That's not what I gravitate towards. I still want to see it through my lens, but it's not my passion. My passion is really people and streets. So it's interesting. Yeah. So we probably have totally different vacation destinations.
Yeah, but it's we're enjoying the photography just as much. So it's good.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's awesome. And I actually, it would be really fun to spend a couple of days on your workshop and you come a couple of days on my workshop and
I'd love it.
Learn new things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what? We've got three questions here.
Yeah.
Let's jump into these.
Go ahead.
And although I think we've got the order, let's go down to the
Shane's
Baker's.
Was first.
Yeah. So I'm going to select this. Shane asks, do you assume a minimum level of knowledge in your workshops, or do you work to the lowest level of understanding in the group? Thanks. So this is a great question, Shane, and I'm going to jump in it first while I'm talking, but you can never reduce the level to the lowest common denominator, because then the people that are more experienced are going to be bored stiff. But what I should say here is there, when on my workshops, I do two different types of teaching. The in the field stuff is very one-on-one. I'm often doing wildlife or landscapes, the people in the group are dispersed. We're rarely all in one place so that I can talk to everyone at once. So what I do is, at that time, I go around and I will help any single person in the group at their level. And if they ask me how to set the exposure compensation, I'll show them how to do that. And it doesn't affect the rest of the group who already know how to set their exposure compensation. One example. But the other thing is that I also do classroom work. And this is probably going to, I'm going to tag on another question later from Paul here about post, but in the classroom, you have to teach at a level where everyone is going to understand it. And I think that in the classroom, I generally start at an intermediate level. I don't try to explain every simple detail. But I take questions at any time. I don't like to do I'm going to talk for an hour now and then we'll ask questions later. I ask people to put their hands up or just chat out whenever they've got a question. And so I will work with people on any level of question to a point. And if it gets to the point where someone is asking very basic questions to so often that they're starting to lose the pace, they're starting to interrupt the pace of the talk too much, then I will say, okay, let's talk about this afterwards. And we'll maybe either do it in the Q&A session or even a private session after dinner one evening where I'll talk directly with that person about the issues that they had. So I think that this is as big a skill as the photography, the actual teaching side here. How to teach without totally reducing the level to a very low level, but at the same time, how to keep everyone happy. You want to answer everyone's questions, but you don't want to do it at the extent where you will start to lower the pace or to make it boring for the more advanced participants.
Yeah.
So, Valerie, I mean, we can go ahead on this for a while, I'm sure. But how about you?
It's very similar, and I find that actually some of the more advanced photographers are so willing to help the more beginner ones, and that's always so much fun, and they enjoy doing it because, you know, people like helping each other, and so my groups are very small, and my workshops are more about seeing and vision than technical skills, so I always assume that everybody knows how to use their camera outside of auto mode, but it's happened that, you know, I've had some photographers that have been on full auto, and it only takes a couple of hours for them to be comfortable and take control of their camera. Because I said, well, if you want to be a storyteller, you have to take control. You can't let your camera do all the work and make the decision. So, you know, just putting them in aperture priority, which works great for street photography, and then they never go back. You know, they never realize how easy it was actually to just make that simple step. Mm-hmm. And so they range from really beginner, who have the passion and really want to learn, I've had professional photographers on my workshop because it's all about travel photography seeing outside the postcard with a huge component, which is street photography. So for a lot of them, it's the first step into street photography. They've never photographed a stranger before. And whether they're here on a weekend workshop in New York or Minneapolis or on a week-long workshop in Paris, it might be their first experience in street photography. So it's really about seeing and making the first step into that new world of photography that they've been very intimidated to approach. And so it doesn't matter what level they're at. And I can sometimes, you know, the newest photographer will make the most amazing photographs in street photography, because it's really about an emotion, and it has nothing to do with the technical skills. And it's very different. Sometimes it's more difficult for landscape photographers who come to my workshop and do street photography for the first time, because when you're shooting landscape, you're on a tripod, you have your time, you can come back at a better light. Where your street photography, you only have that one shot, you only have that fraction of a second. So you have a compromise. Sometimes the light won't be right, but you can't come back. You have that one story. You only have that one shot. So it's harder sometimes for photographers who've been shooting like landscape, because they're used to taking their time. And street photography is a completely different. You have to come with a completely different standard. So it's interesting. I work with different levels too. Yeah.
I'm going to have to say that just for the sake of it, landscape photography to someone that doesn't do it is not as leisurely as you might think, because you know a lot of the time the light is as fleeting as the moment on the street. But in general, I totally agree. You know,
the landscape will still be there tomorrow. You know,
the light may not be. The cloud in the perfect place might not be. But you're right. I mean, the street, that particular thing is only going to happen at that one point. There's a chance that with landscape, you know, you go back, you're going to continue to be able to build on the scene. So I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I know.
thanks for your question, Shane. And I think we're going to continue to touch on this, because there's similar aspects in the other questions. But let me select this one here from Paul Campbell. So, on your workshops, how much time do you have to spend teaching attendees how to manage the simple mechanics of their cameras versus sharing creative use of the equipment and the medium? So, do you want to take that one first this time, Valerie?
For me, it's more about vision and making decisions. I always say that people just shoot too much, and on my workshops, I try to teach how to kind of slow down, not so much for street photography, but in general, and to maybe limit themselves and just make the decisions in camera. I always urge people to use a prime lens on my workshops, because a lot of people come on a workshop, they're in Paris, they have the 24-300, because they figure that's the travel lens. But you know, you're not working very hard if you use that lens. If you limit yourself to a 50 for the day, you're gonna have more keepers, because you're gonna have to work with those limitations. And whenever I always ask my students to have a fixed lens or to borrow one and to use it for a day, even if they feel like they need that wide range. And they always find that that's the day they made their best work. So it's about really making decisions in camera and not so much relying on post-processing. I'm not huge on post-processing. I feel like we're getting a little sloppy because we rely too much on what we can crop out. You know, making those decisions of leaving some elements out of the frame in camera instead of saying, oh, well, I can always crop that out, or I can clone that, whatever. And it's like, no, why? I mean, especially in street photography, you usually don't remove things in post-processing. I mean, you don't spend any time in post-processing, a few seconds per picture, because you're not going to start removing things. It's life. Life is not perfect. Your image is not going to be perfect. And so so for me, it's, you know, it's not so much, it's not a technical, it's not probably as technical as you get into on your workshop. So you probably spend more time on the technicality than I do.
I think it's I mean, basically in answer to the question as well, but obviously with my workshops, you mentioned earlier that you know some people turn up and they're using the camera in automatic and you've got aperture priority. Generally, with my workshops that are in winter conditions, the first thing I do is get people shooting manual, because if you don't shoot manual, then you are going to miss shots as the cranes, they're on a white background one moment and they're on a very mm-hmm. dark background the next. And if you're in aperture priority, you can't be changing the exposure compensation enough to work with both extremes. So I get people in manual pretty much straight away. And a lot of people leave the workshop saying, yeah, well, I'm now a manual shooter. And although, I mean, I'm not a manual snob as such. I don't think that you have to shoot in manual. Conversely, I mean, I'm actually so bad at shooting in aperture priority that I miss shots when I'm in certain conditions because I'm so used to doing manual that just being in aperture priority and doing exposure compensation to me actually takes me longer than just adjusting in manual. It's how I shoot. But I generally start with things like that, and we will, you know, there's a certain amount on my wildlife tours especially, but it happens on the landscape tours as well, where I do have to work with people on technical quite a lot. But once you can only do so much, and especially as most of my tours are in the field, we don't want to be spending a lot of time in the field talking about the technical because we've got a beautiful scene to shoot. Mm-hmm. And so we will, you know, the conversation usually quickly moves on to, so Martin, how are you going to compose this shot? And then I'll start to stand and work with people on how I'm shooting that particular scene. Sometimes one of the things that I do a lot, I mean, I shoot with the group. I always make sure that if there's one spot where people can stand that are going to get a great shot, they'll stand there and I'll be at the side. But 9 times out of 10, there's enough space for us to all be set up together. And what we'll do is I'll say, okay, so I'm going to walk you through how I'm thinking about this scene. And then we'll really be talking about the creative and how I'm thinking, why I'm going to include something. And most of the time, I find it's more important to talk about what you're going to exclude. Picking exactly the right lens, the right focal length to frame, well, I like to call it optimal framing or ideal framing. And this is always... You know, I what's optimal one moment will not be optimal the next. So there's never a correct. I think that's the point I want to make, is that, you know, using the word the correct way to do something is always a recipe for disaster because there's no correct way. But what I find is that at any one time I'm going to start to concentrate on one part of a scene, and I'll talk people through that, and then we'll maybe work with. Okay, so how would you do this? I walk amongst the group a lot. I'll see someone standing doing with their tripod, they're starting to do their work. I'll walk over and ask them to show me what they've got on the back of the camera or take a look through their viewfinder. And so we're interactively working all the time to enhance what they've already got, or conversely, and this happens a lot, I'll walk over to someone and I'll say, okay, show you what you're shooting, and they'll show me something that blows me away. And I'll say, yeah. Oh, Matt, I would never have thought of doing it that way. So, you know, I mean, this takes us back to the fact that even, you know, teaching helps us with our photography. I've learned so much from my participants as well. So I think it's probably about half and half, but it depends on where you are and... You know, it's sometimes you're going to have to put the technical aside unless someone's got a problem that they can't shoot the scene in front of you. You have to put the technical aside and actually create something. Other times you might be in a situation where you've got more time. You're going to be in a location for an hour or two, or maybe a whole day or 2 days, and then you can start to work more individually on the technical aspects and also with the creativity. But it's I would say it's about half and half.
Yeah, and same here when we, well, it's street photography, so it's not like we can be in a pack and shoot streets. So we usually talk as we're heading to a location. Then let's say we'll say, okay, we have 2 hours in this location. So it could be a fairly large neighborhood in Paris, for example. And then I make myself available, but I let the students come to me. So I'm shooting like everybody else. I let them come to me. And some people want to just do their own things for the 2 hours that they have. So the ones that want to come to me and see what I'm doing, see me shoot, or then they get some tips, or I said, oh, look at this. And then I let them just go shoot it. You know, sometimes pointing a story that's happening, they may not have seen it. And because I scan things around me constantly, I see stories happening everywhere. And I said, okay, watch this, you know, try to anticipate, because you only have, you have to capture that one gesture that's going to tell the story. So, and you can't just machine gun it and shoot. I mean, you're going to draw too right. much attention. So you have to wait for that right moment. So then I work one-on-one with the students. And then we work on some techniques, like someday we'll be doing panning, you know, capturing motion in street photography, and we'll be doing panning of bicyclists or people on scooters or whatever. So then for some people it will be a new technique. For others, it's something they've already done, maybe in sports photography or something, so they can apply that into street photography. So a lot of people who've done it before will help other participants. So it's always kind of a teamwork, I find. And then the little groups form, you know, best, you know, people become friends, and a couple people will kind of hang out together for the whole week, and which is fun.
Yeah. I find that. I think that, you know, sometimes you get a group within the group, and people definitely feed off each other. That it's one of the advantages of going on a location workshop. Things like, you know, with what we do, people meet other great photographers and become friends. I know people that after my workshops travel to each other's countries and spend time with each other. They become such good friends.
You know what I do too before each workshop? I start for each workshop has its private group page on Facebook. Yeah. So everybody kind of knows everybody about a month before they meet for real. And then after that, they kind of stay in touch, and I've had groups staying in touch, and I still kind of see what's happening because I have to manage that group. But, you know, for 2 years, and then they come on another workshop with me together because they met on one of my workshops. So it's always kind of fun. And some lifelong friendships have formed. And for me, too, with some of my students, we're always in touch. I've had students who participated in 4 workshops in a year. So it's like I get to know them pretty well. I mean, that's almost 4 weeks we spent together. And so we become really good friends. And it's just so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on a similar line, what I do, I mean, I used to create a private forum on my old forum, but the spammers killed that. So I've not been doing that recently. But what I am doing at the moment, and it's not a proactive thing before we go, which is I should probably start to do that again. That's how the forum used to work. But what I have started doing now is to create a private event on Google Plus, and then people drop their photographs in, and then we can start to talk, and, you know, we comment on each other's photographs when we get back, and that helps to keep the educational part going as well. And not everyone gets involved, but when they do, it's good to see that, and it does help the people to stay. Another thing that I've started doing is because I don't share. I mean, I've been on workshops where without asking permission at all, the workshop leader has sent out an email with all of our home addresses, email, name, and all of that, just sends the whole group out without any, and there are privacy laws that would stop you from doing that. But if you, what I'm going to be doing from this upcoming tour is I've printed a page out with everyone's name on it, and I'm just going to have everyone sign, just quickly sign, just as an indication that they are okay with me sharing their details with the group after the tour. Because a lot of the time people ask me to do that. They'll say, can you share everyone's email address? And although I always say, can I have a show of hands? Anyone that does not want me to do that, let me know, or come and see me later. Nobody does, and everyone is always happy with sharing their email address. But because of privacy laws, I think as the group leader, you have to be careful with what you do with that stuff. So I'm going to be printing out a page and just saying, okay, just let me know, check here, and if you are okay with me sharing your details with the rest of the group. And
yeah, then, that's a good idea, because you can never be too careful.
Right. Yeah. So Paul had another question. Let me select this one. We'll make this one done and select this last one. So Paul also asked, what about the post-processing editing aspect of photography? Do you deal with that or discuss that at all with workshop participants? Okay, I'll take this again first, but I have two different aspects. This really depends on the type of workshop I'm doing. For example, my Pixels to Pigment workshop last year was all classroom, and we dealt with all of the post-processing workflow, digital workflow, from pixel to pigment, so basically from capture to print. So with that, it was all about that. On my Japan workshops, because we have some days where we've got a little bit of downtime, I actually take a projector with me, and we do 1 or 2 hour sessions where one of them is all about the digital workflow. Another is all about Nik Software's Color Effects Pro and Silver Effects Pro. So we get into post-processing. I don't personally do a lot of real pixel pushing on my images. I don't remove a lot of stuff. I don't add anything. And a lot of my images are either straight out of the camera. For wildlife, they're pretty much straight out of the camera, maybe with a little bit of Lightroom work done on them to adjust the shadows, things like that. But I take people through what I do to my images in the classroom. If we're in a place where we don't have a classroom environment, I often do that in smaller group sessions after dinner, or whenever we can, if we've got the time. And that always depends, because a lot of the time we're up at the crack of dawn and people are tired, and after dinner they all just disappear. So, and I often want to get in bed as well, so that we can be back up at 4 a.m. to do it, to start again. But whenever it's possible, as energy levels allow, I sometimes do that in smaller groups as well. But it really depends on the workshop. But in answer to the question, yes, I do like to talk with people about post-processing as well. And this is actually going to lead to a bit of a plug for my new Craft and Vision ebook that will be coming out at the beginning of March now, maybe the middle of March. But a lot of the time people say, okay, so we were in the same place, the composition aside, your images look a lot different to mine. What do you do? And part of it is that, depending on the scene, I might run it through and apply a very light amount of Color Effects Pro, or I might go for a nice contrasty black and white. And the end, in those cases, the end results look a lot different to my digital negative. And so I take people through that as well, either after dinner or in a session, a group session that we actually set up, and I use a projector. And it all depends on whether or not we've got those facilities or the time to do that.
Yeah.
How about you, Valerie?
Yeah, same here. I try not to spend too much time in the classroom. So everybody's really... I encourage them to know how to use, whether it's Aperture or Lightroom. I'm a Lightroom user, and so I'm more than happy to show them what I do. Like, everybody always said, oh, I really like your black and white. It's really contrasty. It's like, you know what? It takes me a few seconds for each picture, because I don't want to spend much time in post. So I'm more than happy to show everybody. I'll pick one image, say, this is exactly what I do, and I'll do it on theirs. And then I have them practice. But that's usually... before the critique session. I think my time is better spent with them in the field and in the critique session than teaching them how to use Lightroom, because they can do that at home with, on Kelby Training or lynda.com. And so I always encourage my students to just, if they're new to Lightroom or Aperture, some of them haven't done much post-processing at all. And so I said, please, just before you leave, just download the software and then spend a few hours learning it, because those are not hours you're going to want to spend when you're in Paris. Why would you want to spend you know, it takes a good 5 to 10 hours to learn how to use Lightroom. Mm. Why would you want to spend that when you're in the most fabulous place in the world? Do it before you leave. And so for a lot of them, that's what they do. Sometimes they have, they're all good intention, and then they get to the workshop and they still have Lightroom in the trial, you know, the trial of Lightroom. And I said, okay, we'll spend a little bit of time just to show you some basic stuff, but you know, you're going to have to learn how to use it once you get home, because you don't want to waste your time here. You want to be in the street. This is the playground. It's the street. Mm. So I encourage them. And then I spent one-on-one time to do critique. And when we critique, I usually look at their images while it's in Lightroom. So then I will go and adjust a few sliders to see that's how I would enhance this a little bit. So that's usually how I teach some of the techniques I use in post-processing, but that's really to a minimum, because as I said, they spent a lot of money to get there, you know, to be on the workshop. Why spend it learning something you can spend, you can do at home for free, you know, with a good book or software?
So that people don't think that people are coming to my workshop.
I think I lost
wasting
the sound, Martin.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there. You're back, yeah.
Yeah. So that people don't think that people come on my workshops and spend the whole time in the classroom. Let me just clarify what happens. I with my workshops, for example, in Iceland, we've got stuff that we can shoot the whole day. So there are no classroom sessions. And the workshops that we do in Japan, we do the classroom sessions in two locations where there's nothing to do outside for a certain block of time. But also, because my workshops are from, we start at like 4 a.m. a lot of the days, and we're out until the sun goes down. So we build in this time to give people an option to actually get some rest as well. What happens is that, you know, some years there's stuff that something happens that we get some condition that is not as common and we don't want to waste it. So some years we don't have time to do the sessions. So, you know, just so that people don't think that we are wasting time. With your workshops, I understand that you've got stuff happening all the time. It's in the street. That's the playground.
Yeah, but we start a little later.
Yeah. there are places where we can get that time. So we're actually utilizing time that would otherwise be wasted. So it's kind of the converse of what you're doing.
That's true.
But these are great questions. So you know what? We don't have any other questions in the queue. I'm going to mark that one as done. If anyone does have any questions, then just type them in. We'll probably be talking for a little while longer while we before we finish. So we've got time to answer a couple more if you've got anything you want to ask. But Valerie, tell me about your writing. I write for Craft and Vision. I write ebooks, and I also write articles for their Photograph magazine. What sort of writing are you doing?
I've been writing for DPS, Digital Photography School, Darren Rose, out in Australia for a few years. I think I wrote 81 or 82 articles as of today. Some of them were interviews and reviews, but now it's mostly just articles about, they're not technical articles, because that's really not what I'm interested in, and some people can write them a lot better than I can. It's more about the business aspect of photography a lot, but mostly about techniques like street photography, how to approach a stranger if you want to do a street portraits, or candid street photography, or motion in street photography, that kind of thing. Recently, one article that was very popular was about Lost Your Photo Mojo, 10 Tips to Get the Magic Back. That kind of articles to kind of inspire people to get back out there and pick up the camera again, and people respond well to those, and I really enjoy writing those. Those are the kinds that, you know, more inspirational things. So that's what I write for DPS. And recently, a new magazine based out of the UK called Absolute Photo Magazine. I think their first publication was in December, so their second one should be out soon. It's a new magazine, online magazine for the iPad only at this point, but that will change. Asked me to have my own column, so now I have my own column for that magazine. That was really fun. I was really thrilled when they called me. And yeah. So I'm doing that. I'm still working on my ebook about street photography. It should be done by now, but I've just been so busy with the Arcanum, and then I'm also an image logger for Samsung, so I'm testing a lot of their gear and things like that. So I've just been really busy lately. So the ebook about street photography is kind of on the back burner again, but it will come
out. Well, that takes us back around to what we were saying earlier. You know, I find it that, you know, when I write something, a lot of the time I'm just finishing two articles for, I mean, I've actually got two columns in the second year in Photograph, the Craft and Vision digital magazine. And I find that when I can write one of those columns, one of those articles in half a day when it goes well. But sometimes I want to make them good. I want to make sure that they're valuable to the reader, you know. And if that doesn't happen in half a day, for example, I've got to write two before I leave for my winter tours. The first one took me a couple of days last week, and the second one I've had the article finished for a few days now, but I've still got to shoot some photographs. That's why my studio's still set up behind me. I've still got to shoot a few photographs for it. But I find that, you know, putting your all into these articles is so valuable, and you know, obviously we get paid for writing these things, but it's really all about it's a great marketing tool, you know, not exactly. to be able to write in high profile like Digital Photo School. I've been trying to find the time to actually start writing for DPS as well. Darlene's asked me about it a while back, I've got to start doing that because it's a great platform.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I find that, you know, writing, it takes time. You've got to be able to put the time aside to actually write something that is valuable enough for people to be able to get anything from. And so this is another reason why it's no longer a, you know, the old sort of assignment photography. I mean, there are people that do only assignments, and great, you know, if that's how you want to make your living, then that's great. But I enjoy writing. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed writing for a long time. Thanks to Michael Rammel, I know that you know Michael as well.
He just interviewed me last week.
Yeah. So so Michael actually helped me for a lot of many hours last year. You know, I mean, it was I paid him for it. It wasn't as though he was just doing it. You know, obviously he needed a little bit of motivation, but he helped me to post the manuscript for the first 200 of my podcasts onto my blog.
Wow.
So I mean, I've been writing the majority of my podcasts over the year. I mean, I'm at 405 now. This one will go out as 407, I think. But that's a lot of writing. And I generally write the manuscript out for each one. So I'm actually writing an article that is usually three or four times longer than a normal magazine article every week. So that takes a lot of time. I was doing that for 5 years while I was in my old day job, and that's why I was getting home and I was writing, I was doing stuff a lot of the time. But I enjoy writing, and so, you know, now all of my articles and everything that had a manuscript is all on my blog. I've actually revamped the website over the Christmas and New Year period so that I can do this. But I've taken down a lot of my old website, and it's all linked on. It's all under WordPress now, working a lot better. But the point there is that, you know, the writing is very, very important to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And it's not even my native language. I don't even write in French. I mean,
that's incredible. I mean, you know, because although I speak Japanese, but I wouldn't like to write article after article in Japanese. Although I'm fully, you know, I can read and write perfectly, I wouldn't want to write in it. So you know, hats off there for doing all of that.
I became a photographer here in the U.S. and I only teach my workshops in English. So to me, my photography language is totally English. I think it would be really tough to teach it in French now.
Yeah, you know what? I learned computers in Japan, and so all of my computer terminology was Japanese for years, and it's still a lot of my original computer Japanese I went to college here in Japan, and I went back to England for 3 years from 97 to 2000, and I would try to tell people how to do a certain thing in Word or something, and I would use all the wrong. I used to think that autocorrect was autocollect, because in in Japanese there's no difference between the R's and the L's. It's like in the middle. So I thought it was autocollect, and I used to think that a path was a pass. Because I read it all in Japanese and never really understood the the English was, but yeah. So there's another commonality. More in common than we thought.
Both live in a country that's not our native country, and the language is not in our native language either.
Yeah, so. It's funny.
Fun.
So let's see. We've just come up on an hour, we don't have any other questions. So shall we start to wrap it up?
Sure. Yeah, that's great. So tell me, what's your next workshop?
Oh, literally in 3 days' time, Sunday. This was going to go into my podcast feed in a couple of weeks, but I'll already be on my first of my two Winter Wonderland tours this year here in Japan. So we'll be going off photographing the snow monkeys and then going to Hokkaido for a further 9 days, 12-day tour, and then I get back from that. I have a week at home to catch up on sleep and get over the first tour, and then I go back and do it all again from the middle of February until the end of February. So,
wow.
After that we've got Iceland. I've still got two places left in my Iceland tour, which is in towards the end. I think it's September 22nd to October 3rd. And I've got a couple of Sri Lanka tours coming up, and probably a Namibia tour again later in the year. So, and all of that, while we're talking about it, if people are interested in joining any of that, if you just come over to martinbaileyphotography.com, there's a tours and workshops link in the menu, and everything that's currently open for booking is listed in there. So, but how about you? Where are you going next? Where are your adventures taking to you?
I'm flying somewhere every month this year. In February, I'm heading down to Melbourne and teaching a workshop in Australia for the first time, so that's exciting. Mm. And then after that, it's going to be weekend workshop in New York, weekend workshop in Chicago, and those I'm co-leading. Chicago I'm doing with Dan Ablin, who's also on TWIP. New York workshop with James Mayer, who is a New York street photographer. But those are big city. I'm completely fine in Paris because it's my city. But yeah. New York, for the first time teaching street photography, I feel like I have to be with a native New Yorker who shoots street. So we're co-leading that one. Same with Chicago. Then several in Minneapolis, weekend workshops. Paris in June. And actually, guess who is going to be on that workshop?
Go Frederick. Frederick. Oh, brilliant. Oh, nice.
Yeah, he announced it on TWIP last week, so I think he's pretty serious about it. So Paris in June, and then again in September, October. So it's going to be a busy year. It's exciting. It's really filling up quickly. I think I only have like three spots left for June, four spots for September. So it's they're filling up nicely. Chicago and New York filled up really fast, so it's good. But I actually have a spot left for Australia in February, so if anybody is out in Melbourne and wants to join at the last minute, they can still sign up. So,
yeah, great.
Yeah,
good stuff. Well,
yes,
it's been I've had a blast. I hope the listeners get something from this as well. Like I say, I'm going to be putting this into my podcast feed on February 3rd, 2 weeks from now almost. And you're going to be putting it on your Q&A blog, I believe, Valerie.
Yes, I'll put the video. Yeah, it's kind of fun. I've had a few conversations, and they're very informal conversations, just like this, whether it's about inspiration or things like that. So, and it's part of my Q&A blog.
Yeah. Well, I obviously, for anyone that's watching the video, we've got our URLs, our web addresses there on the video. But like I say, mine's martinbaileyphotography.com. And do you want to spell yours out, Valerie?
Yeah, that's Valerie Jardin Photography. That's VALERIEJARDIN photography.com, all in one word. And everything is in there.
Yeah, your pronunciation is incredible. So yeah, the great stuff. Thanks very much, and I've had a lovely time talking with you this morning, or your evening, and let's do it again.
Same here. Thanks. Bye, Martin.
Bye. Bye, Valerie.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks everyone that watched.
Thank you.
Bye bye. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. It's always a pleasure speaking with Valerie. So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.